plans for the day by 4 p.m. and had to find busy work to fill up the time until she could go home at 6. Even when they were dating, she and her husband Anthony, also in marketing, had always had side hustles, such as buying items at discount stores and reselling them on Amazon. It was something they did as a couple, a shared activity that gave them a little sense of freedom. In addition, Anthony, who had developed an interest in web design and social media in college, built websites. When he got a camera soon after they were married, they thought they'd go out and take pictures of themselves and their daughter, document their family life on a blog, and hopefully make a little money off the affiliate links. Xavier, always interested in style and fashion, would do the creative, and Anthony would take care of the back end of the blog. The only reason Xavier started an Instagram account was to promote and bring traffic to the blog. She figured out that she was supposed to tag brands and use hashtags by looking at other accounts like hers. 6 months in, when she'd accrued about 10,000 followers and was earning about $100 per month from the affiliate links on her blog, she started getting occasional calls from brands asking if they could send her some clothes so she could post photos of herself wearing some of their pieces. That's when she started doing some research and discovered that there was a whole strategy behind growing an Instagram account. She and Anthony stayed up late at night reading and listening to podcasts about online marketing. It was after reading Crush It that they realized the blog could be more than just a fun hobby, an actual business. That's when they started charging brands for posts. At first, one Instagram post with the brand mentioned in the caption was $100. If the brand simply wanted to be tagged, she'd charge $50. When the people on the other end of the phone expressed surprise, "Oh, only $100? She knew she was underselling herself, so she upped her fee to $200 per post. Then one day, an established jewelry line emailed her and proposed one blog post and one Instagram post for a fee of $1,000. Xavier wasn't a seasoned influencer yet, but she was smart enough to know that a company's first offer was almost always less than what it was ultimately willing to pay. Again, she raised her rates, and soon she was earning as much or more per day as she was at her insurance marketing job. After 3 months of matching her income, a year and a half after starting the blog, she left her day job so she could network and accept more invitations for brand meetings and to preview new collections. There, she also met other bloggers who were willing to answer questions and help her calculate her worth. At her husband's suggestion, she also started getting more personal on her blog, starting with a post titled, "I Quit." The response was so overwhelming, in particular from other people wanting advice on how to start their own blogs, that she started posting weekly blogging tips. The first, "How I Started My Blog in 5 Steps," remains one of her most read posts. Today, Xavier has a manager who negotiates her fees and helps her get branding work, but she still tags brands she's wearing, and she only posts brands she really loves and believes in. The blog has also expanded from strictly fashion to a lifestyle brand. Xavier travels a lot for work, but she uses the opportunity to produce travel content on the go, photographing herself at hotels, resorts, and restaurants that she likes and that she thinks her readers will appreciate. For this reason, she has developed good relationships with a number of hotel brands, and now when she and her family travel on their own, their stays are usually comped. She is also frequently invited to visit openings of new resorts or hotels so she can share the experience with her readers. In May 2016, Anthony quit his job too, a move he announced in a blog titled, "He Quit Too." The pair tries to shoot all their photos during the day so that they are available when their daughter comes home from school. Jaden's life changed as well. Her father is present for every school event. She no longer attends after-school care. Sometimes brands request pictures of Brittany with Jaden, especially for child-friendly or Mother's Day events or promotions. When that happens, Xavier's rate goes up, and she deposits a portion of the fee into an account created for Jaden, which she's using to teach her 10-year-old the basic principles of financial literacy. The multiple deadlines and the inability to turn off the machine, even for a short vacation, can create a lot of pressure. "I've been doing this for almost 4 years, the same thing every day. We're taking photos, we're shooting content, writing, thinking about future trends, but the couple's daughter helps keep everything in focus for them." Having a child means that Xavier refuses more jobs than a lot of other lifestyle bloggers. It's not always an easy choice. "I turned down a really great job from a well-known jewelry line. They wanted me to attend a 2-hour dinner and post to Instagram and Facebook while I was there. The job was more than a 3-month salary at my former full-time job. As far as posting requirements, this was one of the easiest jobs I probably could have booked, but I had agreed to go on a school trip to Sacramento with Jaden. It was killing me, but I had to keep it in focus. The whole reason I did this was so I could go on these trips with Jaden and be there for her. There will be other jobs. The competition in the fashion and lifestyle blogosphere is fierce, but Xavier still sees room for newcomers. Even though it is saturated, if you can do it in a unique way or have your own style, you can definitely stand out in the crowd. Brands are always looking for what's new. They're always pouring more money into influencer marketing because they're seeing more of the conversion of blogs versus a radio ad or a television ad where they have no tracking. But through blogs, they're able to track exactly where the links are coming from and exactly the conversions. Brands are definitely catching on more, and the ones that are not using affiliates or not doing the campaigns are figuring out how they can get into that. In fact, digital ad sales are expected to surpass global TV ad sales by the end of 2017. On screen, Xavier and her family's life seems effortless, but she expresses surprise at how many people don't recognize how much work it takes to build a successful blog and Instagram account. So many people write to me and say, I wrote a post and no one read it, so how would I grow that? I'm like, you didn't even do any consistent work. I worked so much on the weekends and nights while working my other job. I didn't go out with my friends. I didn't go out on dates. We literally stayed at home and worked on our computer after our daughter went to bed. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of research. You don't just sign up. For the first year, I wasn't making any money, maybe $100 or $200 a month. It was nothing. People don't understand that part. They're like, why would you do it for a year when you see no return? I was seeing a return on my readership, and my following was growing, and that was motivating me. But for someone starting a blog who wants to make it specifically for money, it's a hard way to start, because you're not passionate about what you're doing. You have to love what you do.
14. Podcasts. Podcasts are a godsend for two reasons. One, most people aren't comfortable on camera. They think they look stupid. They worry about their hair, their glasses, or their makeup. They fuss over lighting. None of it matters. But it's enough to distract them from concentrating on providing the best experience they can for their viewers. Podcasts are far less intimidating. Two, podcasts sell time, which is why everyone, including people who rock on camera, should try to create one. In this hyperspeed world, multitasking is everything. And it's a lot easier to listen to a podcast while checking emails and paying bills than watch video. In addition, as of 2014, the 139 million total commuters in the U.S. spend 29.6 billion hours traveling to and from their workplaces. A lot of the commute time is spent in cars, where drivers can't watch video. For now, by the way. They can, however, easily listen to podcasts. In the information age, podcasts allow us to efficiently and effectively maximize our knowledge. I've had a podcast since October 2014, right around the time that the podcast Serial, produced by NPR's This American Life, became a sensation and thrust podcasting into the mainstream. But the truth is, I wasn't following my own advice. At the time, I felt stretched too thin to produce yet another piece of original native content for a platform. Yes, even I reached my limits. So all I did was put up the audio track from the Ask Gary Vee show. It didn't do badly. I was always in the top 25 podcasts in the business category. But I knew, with more attention, it could do better. In December 2016, I finally figured out how to rebrand it as the Gary Vee Audio Experience, which was liberating. Instead of exclusively posting Ask Gary Vee content, now I could post a rant I recorded into my phone while boarding a plane, a clip from one of my keynotes, or an excerpt that didn't make it into a Daily Vee. Inserting variety and creativity helped the podcast's popularity surge. Today, my podcast sits comfortably and consistently in the list of the top 150 podcasts on the Apple charts. Some of those who listen are brand new to my content, and others already follow me on other channels. Either way, it gives me one more way to share my content, build my influence, and help people get started building the life that they want. Podcast 101. Whether you're uploading onto Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or any other podcast distribution platform, there will be very little you can do to differentiate one from another. You can run ads on Spotify and SoundCloud, but they're still extremely expensive. Other than that, as of the time of this recording, there are really no original creative ways to build a personal brand within the podcast platforms other than by producing the best content you can. You'll have to promote your show through other social network channels and encourage symbiotic relationships with others who have bigger platforms than you. The good news is, however, is that iTunes will open up podcasting analytics, so podcasters will be able to see exactly what people pause, skip, or sign off with in their content. This will be invaluable to helping you learn faster how you can better tailor your content to serve your audience what it wants. Imagine this. Let's say you're a 75-year-old woman named Blanche. Your best friend is Judy. You've become inseparable since you were young girls growing up on the same block, and you've never lived more than a few miles apart. The two of you have raised a combined total of 6 children, been married 3 times, buried 1 husband, taken 12 joint vacations, adopted 11 pets, and over the past 10 years, the only time you've missed your monthly standing date for a movie and lunch at Ruby Tuesday was the time that Judy was hospitalized with gallstones. One night, in line to buy candy before seeing Wonder Woman at the movie theater, Judy says that she thought Kathleen Turner's best performance might have been when she did the speaking voice of Jessica Rabbit. Here we go again. One of the reasons you like going to the movies with Judy is that the two of you rarely agree on the merits of a film, and it makes for great debate over burgers and fries afterward. But this time she's taken you by surprise. You raise your eyebrows so high they climb right over your hairline. Better than Turner's role in Romancing the Stone? Better than Prizzy's Honor? Better than Peggy Sue Got Married? Judy holds firm. As you bicker, you can hear people chuckling behind you. Someone says, "Hey, they're the new Siskel and Ebert." That gives you an idea. After the movie, you and Judy head over to your favorite quiet corner at the local Ruby Tuesdays. But before the two of you exchange your thoughts on Wonder Woman, you pull out your phone and hit the voice memo button. You record your conversation. You go home, and the next day you call your nephew, who has a podcast about muscle cars, and ask him how to upload your tape onto the internet. He gently informs you that you're going to need to upload the MP3 file onto a podcasting platform, and if you can wait until the weekend, he'd be happy to show you a few simple steps and teach you how to use the basic equipment you'll need to get set up. If you can't wait, he says, you can find all the information you need on the internet. Just Google how to upload a podcast and distribute it. You decide to wait, but in the meantime, you call Judy and tell her that you want to go to the movies again next week. Thus begins the Blanche and Judy Show, a movie review podcast in which two elderly ladies share their thoughts on movies past and present. Your personalities, deep friendship, and chemistry make it a riot for the listeners, but you also make it uniquely 2018, by recording your conversations in the theater before the movie starts, on such topics as your strong conviction that Raisinets are a disgrace to the grape, and Judy's memories about the ushers that used to escort ladies to their seats. You also interview 4 people as they walk out the film to get their take. In 3 short years, yours is one of the top 150 podcasts on Apple. The podcast is your pillar, but you use it to create micro-content, too. Judy's sense of humor is often good for a quote, so you create memes and post them on Facebook and Instagram. You engage with people on Twitter and raise awareness for the podcast. The two of you are interviewed by Entertainment Weekly and Variety. In time, it gets harder for you to get out of the house every week. Your back often aches, and you're most comfortable in your lazy boy. But it doesn't matter anymore, because the studios are sending you and Judy their movies to preview. Thanks to the branding opportunities that have come your way, all of your living expenses are more than easily covered. And you are thrilled to know that you will be able to pass much more of the savings you and your husband accrued over your life to your family.
How I'm Crushing It. John Lee Dumas, Entrepreneurs on Fire. Instagram at John Lee Dumas. I was dying a slow death in the cubicle. Sound familiar? If you're still young or in school, is it something you are trying like hell to avoid? I had this whole world of creativity inside me, but I wasn't able to use any of it. I felt like I was almost choking on my own creativity because I had to be in a suit and tie and very formal. Everything was black and white, and I needed some color in my life. Until he turned 32, John Lee Dumas's life had been as traditional as apple pie. The grandson of two military veterans and the son of a JAG officer, service to his country was in his blood. He left his small town in Maine in 1998 on an Army ROTC scholarship to major in American Studies at Providence College in Rhode Island. A member of the first round of officers commissioned after 9/11, a year to the day after graduating college, he started a 13-month tour of duty in Iraq. He spent 4 years on active duty before returning to the civilian world. He was at the start of a 4-year stint as a captain in the reserves, but otherwise he had no idea what to do with himself. He tried law school but dropped out 6 months later. He then worked in corporate finance for a few years, but when he'd look at the people working in the positions above him, he knew he didn't want their jobs. He had a feeling that he was destined for entrepreneurship, but he didn't know what it really entailed or how to even begin. So he started reading self-help and business books. In 2009, 1 month after its publication, he read Crush It. That was the book that inspired him to quit the finance job, move to San Diego, where he'd never been, and become a real estate agent. He kept at it for 3 years, but the job still didn't feel like a perfect fit. He kept rereading Crush It every year, though, and in 2012, something new struck him. I emphasize that no matter what industry you worked in, you had to build a personal brand. He realized that he wasn't doing that at all. He had a personal Facebook page, but he wasn't even on LinkedIn or Twitter in any professional capacity. So he knew that needed to change right away. The other thing that caught his attention was the idea of podcasting. He wasn't really sure what a podcast was, so he decided to research it. He discovered that they were free and offered focused, targeted content. All those self-help books and audiobooks were getting expensive, and now he had to listen to even more if he was going to build a personal brand. Podcasts sounded like they were right up his alley. And that's when I fell in love with the medium. I became a super consumer. For 8 months, I listened to as many podcasts as I could, and it struck me that, geez, I'm driving to work every single day, I'm hitting the gym multiple times per week, I need to find that 7-day-a-week show that interviews an entrepreneur and talks about their failures, lessons learned, aha moments. So I went to iTunes to find that show. It didn't exist. And I thought, I can't believe this. Why not be the person to create that show? So what if I had no experience in production or interviewing people? I thought, well, if I do a daily show, I'll get better quicker. Because all these people, they're doing 4 episodes a month with their weekly shows. I'm going to be doing 30 episodes a month. I just need to step into this void and do it, and I'm going to be bad. I'm going to do a hack job for a decent amount of time. And you can listen to today's podcast and go back to episode 15, and you can see this guy isn't the same person. I was so bad. I was nervous. I was naive. I was just hacking my way through it. But I kept doing it every single day. He didn't just turn on a mic and start talking. Instead, he researched, diving into YouTube, absorbing all the free content and advice made available by other podcasters, and he found two mentors. Unnervingly, both strongly advised against doing a daily show, explaining that they made all their money doing other things besides podcasting. A daily show would preclude all those other activities. It was the only piece of advice Dumas rejected. I was like, you don't understand. I'm so bad that if I did what everyone else is doing, nobody's going to listen. It's just not going to be good. So I have to do something different. I have to be unique. I have to do something that's going to raise people's eyebrows. Those two mentors, with their large virtual Rolodexes, were invaluable to helping Dumas land his first interviews. They weren't going to introduce him to A players, but they were willing to introduce him to the B, C, and D players who were still building an audience, publishing books, and eager to share their stories with a neophyte in exchange for additional exposure. It might sound as though Dumas has more confidence than the average human. Yet despite his conviction that podcasting every day, learning by doing, would be the best way to create a quality product, and despite many of his early guests' relatively low profiles and the public's almost immediate positive response, Dumas found himself almost paralyzed by imposter syndrome. Who was he to reach out to anyone for a one-on-one conversation? But he soldiered on and worked through his doubts and fears. I started my entrepreneurial journey with one strength, and that was discipline. And I can tie that directly back to the Army. But discipline alone is not going to get you anywhere. The two biggest areas I had to develop to go along with discipline were productivity and focus. People who are just disciplined can do something all day long, but what if they're producing the wrong content? That's where productivity has to come in. And you're not going to be able to consistently produce the right content unless you're able to block out what I call the weapons of mass distraction. He launched his podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, in September 2012. As his guests shared their interviews with their sizable audiences, the podcast started ranking on the iTunes New and Noteworthy list. The dual effect meant that within 2.5 months, the podcast drew over 100,000 unique downloads. He started receiving invitations to conferences, which gave him greater credibility, and along with his rapidly growing numbers, the opening to approach bigger names such as Seth Godin and Tim Ferriss, who had both just released new books, Barbara Corcoran, and yes, Gary Vaynerchuk. Now he was ready to explore ways to monetize. He turned to his audience and asked them what they wanted, and he listened. What I found very clearly was, if you are willing to commit to delivering free, valuable, and consistent content, you are going to build an audience from that. Then, if you are willing to engage that audience one-on-one and ask them, what are you struggling with? And then just listen, they will tell you what their pain points are, their obstacles, their challenges, their struggles. And then you, the person that they know, like, and trust, who's been delivering that free, valuable, and consistent content for a significant amount of time, can provide the solution in the form of a product or a service or a community. And he did. Like Pat Flynn, each month he publishes a breakdown of what the business earns from his various revenue streams, which all add up to anywhere from around $200,000 to $300,000 per month. He also analyzes the company's successes so other people can emulate them, and all the mistakes they've made, including money lost, so people can avoid making them. Despite being a millionaire several times over, Dumas still reads Crush It every year. The thing that keeps coming back to me is the land grab. That's what I think so many people miss. All the time people say, John, you're so lucky that you started podcasting when it was nothing, and now it's the golden age of podcasting. You have the land grab. And they're completely right. My timing was perfect. It was super amounts of luck and great timing, but what they miss is that there's always that next thing. They're not focusing on the next thing. They're looking at the past. And then there's the next snapshot, and then there's Instagram stories, and now there's Facebook Live. There's always that next opportunity to land grab and to become that person. Yes, I'm considered the king of podcasting in a lot of niches because I've been able to build a seven-figure business around just podcasting. But since I've launched my podcast, there have been people that have become the king of Periscope, and then the king of Snapchat, and the king of Instagram. things that didn't even exist when I launched my podcast. And while people were saying, John, I just missed the boat with podcasting, I'm like, yeah, but you've also missed the boat with all these other things. So what I learned from Crush It and continues to be relevant to me is always keep your eyes on that horizon.
15. Voice first. This may be my favorite chapter. Chances are good that most people listening to this have at least heard of, if not experimented with, all the platforms we have discussed so far in this book. But few of you, at the time of this recording, are probably sitting around thinking, what's my Alexa skill gonna be? And yet you should, because we're about to talk about a tech innovation that I'm absolutely sure will transform how the world consumes content. It's called Voice First, and anyone currently building a personal brand needs to learn about it fast and early. Its platforms are the equivalent of the yet-to-be-discovered Malibu beachfront property, much like Twitter in 2006, Instagram in 2010, and Snapchat in 2012. I day trade attention, and lately I'm particularly interested by what people pay attention to during the transitions of their day, especially the three that occur in the home. What do they do the first 15 minutes of their morning? The first 15 minutes after they come home from work, and the last 15 minutes before they go to sleep at night. Those are transition periods. They're the moments when we take stock, get updated, and plan for the next few hours of our lives. We're busy, and so we want to do it fast. There was a time you'd pull out a pen and paper and start to do a to-do list, turn on the radio, or even check an app. Now, though, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is talk. Podcasts fill our brains during the long periods when we are quiet, such as when we drive or travel. Voice first platforms are going to allow us to fill our brains during all the transitions of our lives, those blips of time that used to be lost to forgettable activities like brushing our teeth, sorting through mail, or even checking our phone notifications. In 2016, Google revealed that 20% of searches on its mobile app and Android devices are done by voice. That number is only going to rise fast. And you have an amazing opportunity to make sure your brand rises with this trend. As of this moment, there are two key players: Amazon Alexa, played through a device called Echo, and Google Assistant, played through its Google Home device. Microsoft, Apple, Samsung, and others are preparing to make their respective pushes into the space with platforms of their own. But at this time, it makes sense for us to focus on the big two. I started with Alexa, launching a flash briefing skill called GaryVee 365. A flash briefing is a short report offering users a bit of key information. Mine offers daily motivation from yours truly. The Skim airs its breakdown of the day's top news stories. eHouse presents daily life hacks. Add these and others to your list of flash briefings. And when you ask for them, either by saying, Alexa, give me my flash briefings, or even, Alexa, what's in the news, you'll hear from your favorite sources one after another. Other skills offer more interactive experiences. Enable the Tonight Show skill, as opposed to a flash briefing, and you could ask for Jimmy Fallon's most recent monologue, but you can also get the most recent Tonight Show guest list or a rundown of his newest thank you notes, a popular segment on the show where he expresses gratitude for anything from Pop-Tarts to Ryan Gosling. I could develop a skill called Gary V Recommends Wine that recommends three wines to go with whatever you told it you were going to eat, and gives you the ability to order those wines straight from the skill through a third-party alcohol delivery service like Drizzly or Mini Bar Delivery, or from my family wine shop, Wine Library. What we're seeing with the development of Voice First is the culmination of our addiction for speed. The world moves fast, and we want to keep up. If there is a choice between reading a notification or checking in on an app and getting the same information via Voice First, which allows us to keep our hands free and multitask, the latter is what we're going to pick. Just like the first washing machines and coffee makers, voice-first platforms will save people time. Once the masses understand that, they're going to flock to them. Be there, ready, and waiting for them. Your flash briefing will become a one-minute version of your one-hour podcast, a one-minute audio version of your eight-minute videos or live streams, or a one-minute selection of your pretty pictures on Instagram. You can bring people so much value right now, whether you create for Google or Amazon or both. While brands have developed countless skills, most deliver the same basic experience. The field is clear for anyone who is clever enough to come up with something fresh and new. Take the land grab, my friends, and become a vital part of your consumers' morning routines. Very soon, as even more brands jump onto these platforms, it will get harder to make a dent into people's awareness. Don't let this moment pass. Don't let the big guys snap up all the cheap real estate. Please stop listening to this right now and go create your skill. Your one-minute audio tip of the day could be the thing that compels a person to put your podcast on during their morning commute instead of listening to NPR or classic rock. Skills 101. Keep your content super brief. 2. Make it native. Do not do what I did with my original podcast when I just transferred audio from video onto the podcast platform. Tailor your content to suit the reason people are consuming it, which is to get fast, easily digestible information nuggets. Hey, Alexa users. And finally, make it the highest quality possible. I cannot stress how important it is to not treat your skill as a dumping ground. It's great to collect the scraps from your other content so they don't go to waste, but study each piece of content closely and use your imagination and creativity to craft something new and fresh with them. You know how it's such an irritating process to get off an email list? First, you have to bother to go to the bottom of the email and hunt for the unsubscribe button. Then you have to plod through a box asking you if you're absolutely sure you want to leave. Do you care to share why? And then finally, upon confirming that you've been unsubscribed, you're told it could take a few business days before the email stopped coming. In Voice First, all people will have to do when they lose interest in your content is to say, Alexa, remove Mumbo Jumbo's flash briefing. And boom, it will be done. You will have no room for error, no room to be annoying or too long or low quality. Go ahead and document the process while you learn how to craft your content. You can use clips from it in material for other content. But make sure whatever segment you publish is short and tight. You will need to be remarkable right out the gate, or in 3 milliseconds, you'll be shut down. Voice First is going to become a huge pillar in our communications. By the time you're listening to this book, Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, Apple Siri, or some other platform will be talking to us in our cars. Remember, when we all thought it was amazing that we could be driving along, recall that we used to love Kenny Rogers' Lady and download his greatest hits as soon as we got to our destination, because we would never do that while we're driving, right? Soon, we won't have to wait to play a song or pull over to type in a location on a map app. We'll just tell Alexa what we want to hear, and she'll do it. Finally, texting and driving will be a thing of the past, unless we're in our driverless cars. Skills 201. There is no Skills 201. The feature is so new, we're just not there yet for identifying best practices. I hope you'll share yours with me as you discover them and explore all the exciting possibilities in this space. Hit me up on Twitter at @GaryBEE. My intuition is that all brands in the how-to space will flock to Voice First by 2020, and they will battle to be the ones chosen to teach people to make cookies, pair wine, and get better at chess and clean carpets. It will be our on-the-go resource, too. When changing our oil in the garage, we won't pull out the car manual or Google how to change your oil. We'll just call out, "Tell me how to change my oil," and the Voice First technology sitting on the shelf mounted on the wall will ask us what kind of car we drive, Then we'll walk us through the process step by step. Right now, we're putting Voice First Tech in only one or two rooms in our house. In the future, we won't go anywhere without it. Imagine this. Let's say you're a 49-year-old etiquette coach named Marlo. You used to think you'd be educating children in the finer points of polite conversation and the continental style of eating, but over time, your services have been increasingly sought out by companies desperate to fill in the educational gaps of their millennial hires. They just don't know anything about proper protocol, especially for the international business or formal affairs. Your business is doing okay, but things are starting to feel routine. You're at your boyfriend's house one morning, and you hear him ask Alexa to tell him what's in the news. A seemingly human voice reads the morning headlines, then the weather, some sports stats, and a fun fact of the day, all from different media outlets. Fun fact of the day, that's not news, that's just learning for the sake of learning. A light bulb goes on. You spend the next few weeks recording the answers to every etiquette question you can think of. How do you fold a napkin for a formal table? Should I invite my boss to my birthday dinner? What's the best icebreaker question? How do I end a conversation at a cocktail party without being rude? Can I wear black sneakers with a black suit? You could have asked your phone these questions, but you look up how to build an Alexa skill online and learn that there's a studio just a few miles away that will help you record the audio file. You upload your new Alexa skill, the Manners Maven, and announce it to your clients and all of your content channels. They love the way the platforms let them engage with you in a virtual one-on-one. It gives them confidence. Eventually, you add on calls to action to direct people to other pieces of your content on the internet so they can discover longer versions of the answers they got from you there, as well as guest posts from other experts and interviews with people sharing their funniest, most awkward faux pas. Imagine this. Flash briefings. Let's say you're a 37-year-old landscaper named Johnny. Your business, Johnny's Landscaping Art, nets around $200,000 per year. You decide that you need a boost to your brand awareness, so you launch 11 flash briefings. Johnny's Daily Yard Tips, Zone 1. Johnny's Daily Yard Tips, Zone 2, and so on. Every day of the year, you offer the country seasonal information that will help gardeners tend to their yards better, tailored for each of the 11 USDA plant hardiness zones, which are based on the region's minimum temperatures. It's April 21st, and the spring has sprung. Zone 4, you're going to want to start fertilizing those spring bulbs. Zone 9, friends, I want you to consider planting citrus. Zone 6, now that your forsythia is blooming, make sure not to wait too long to prune it, or it will be scraggly next year. You're the first of your kind on Amazon, and you're really good at it. The love you have for the work and your playful nature comes through bright and shiny to the gardeners and homeowners who add one of your flash briefings to their morning lineup. Meanwhile, Yvette, in Seattle, is in charge of curating the Alexa Skills store, and she is bored. Every flash briefing is the same tech, weather, sports shit over and over. Wait a minute. What's this Johnny's Daily Yard Tip? Well, that's different. Different is good. She features one of your skills on the page. And this is why you want to create content for Alexa now. What Facebook did for social network games and Apple did for apps, Amazon is going to do for skills and flash briefings. They're going to run commercials to raise awareness about their new product. Can you imagine if your voice is the one the whole country hears as an example of a great flash briefing? It could do for you what Apple's choosing of 1-2-3-4 in their 2007 iPod Nano commercial did for Feast. Here's the very best part. You know how I'm always telling you that everything I want you to do is going to be hard and takes scads of patience? Not this time. It will not take you too much time or effort to be discovered for creating a flash briefing because of the early novelty. It will 5 years from now, however. 5 years from now, everyone will have a flash briefing. And it's highly unlikely that yours will get noticed without marketing the living shit out of it to get exposure. 5 years from now, the moment will be gone. Do not wait. Because you know what else happens, Johnny? Your flash briefings are featured. They take off, and suddenly you get an email from Cindy in Missouri asking if you're interested in franchising your now nationally known brand. Within 2 years, your $200,000 a year landscaping business is collecting $25,000 checks each year from 700 people all over the country. Incidentally, Marlo, the Manners Maven, should do this too. In addition to making her skill, she should make a new recording of 365 etiquette questions, one for every day of the year. Did you know that even in the digital age, a handwritten thank you note should always be sent after a job interview? Did you know that the word etiquette is derived from the French word for ticket? And King Louis XIV's attempt to keep visitors from trampling his gardens? She needs to do this for the simple reason that she can, because the cost of internet real estate today is still so, so low. Don't be the 2017 first-time home buyer in Malibu. Be the goddamn Thomas Jefferson buying about 800,000 square miles of Louisiana territory for 3 cents an acre in 1803 dollars. Skipping the part about screwing the Native Americans already living on the land, of course. On the horizon. While I was working on this book, Amazon announced that it had bought Whole Foods for just over $13.4 billion. We all woke up to the news and thought, how the fuck did that happen? It never should have happened. Whole Foods should have bought Amazon. There was a time 20 years ago when Whole Foods was a much bigger business than Amazon. And when your company is that much bigger than someone else's, with that much of a lead, you should never lose. If it does, it's because your opposite number innovated ahead of you. To those who think they don't have to invest in all the platforms because they're concentrating their efforts where they're seeing the most ROI, I say you're being foolish. I can think of several bloggers who were massively popular in 2004. It was a new frontier, and they had positioned themselves front and center. But they ignored the rise of YouTube and podcasts and Twitter, and now they're irrelevant. They found something that worked and preferred to rest on their laurels rather than stay hungry and sharp. They thumbed their noses at traditional media, but then they became traditional media. We see it all the time. ESPN made Sports Illustrated look old. Bleacher Report is in the process of making ESPN look fusty. Barstool Sports is already starting to make Bleacher Report feel stale. It happened to Macy's. It happened to Radio Shack, Woolworths, Tower Records, Nokia. They crushed. They stagnated. They died. They are no different from any other brand crushing it today. One day, we will have a WTF moment upon hearing that Ralph Lauren filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection or that GQ no longer exists. Learn the lessons now. Everyone is playing the same game. If you don't play offense all the time, every day, every year, no matter how successful you've become, someday you will wind up playing defense. You have to keep looking ahead. I've got my eye on Marco Polo, Anchor, After School, AR, aka augmented reality, VR, aka virtual reality, and AI, artificial intelligence. You know what's going to happen? One day, there's going to be a little ball hanging above every single human's head recording everything they do. Swear to God, it's going to happen. Maybe a camera will be embedded in your body. I don't know the details. But I know that recording and documenting every minute of our lives will seem perfectly normal one day. You might think it sounds awful and even scary. But just imagine if you could watch your great-great-grandmother right now. Imagine seeing her move through her life as a young woman. Watching her fall in love with your grandpa, raising her kids, your mom, or starting a new job. Not as though you were watching a movie, but feeling as if you were physically moving through her world with her. That's how real the technology is going to be. The question is not if, but when. The passion I've deployed around Alexa Flash skills is the same passion I had for Twitter and YouTube in 2008, when I wrote this book's mother, Crush It. back when the masses didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. Now people know what I'm talking about when it comes to Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, but they aren't doing the next step. They aren't tasting and trying and experimenting. They're leaving that up to me. They shouldn't. They should be out there with me trying these things for themselves. You shouldn't have to turn to me and ask for what's next. What do you see? All I'm doing is looking towards the horizon to see what platforms are capturing people's attention and altering their behavior. If I see something that's performing consistently, I take a closer look, and then a longer look, and then I start to execute. That's all you have to do too. I don't have a second sight. I just have a lot more patience than you do.
How I'm Crushing It. Andy Frisella, The MFCEO Project. Instagram, @ Andy Frisella. Andy Frisella looks like a man who could squash your head like a grapefruit. For someone in his line of work, that's a good thing. Built and buff, his face lightly scarred from a long-ago knife attack, Andy is the founder and CEO, actually the MFCEO, I'll let you guess what the MF stands for, of two companies dedicated to fitness and health. A voracious reader, he found Crush It by chance. He regularly buys books as they come out on Amazon, regardless of whether he's heard good things about them or not, figuring that if he can glean even one or two useful pointers or thought-provoking ideas from each, his time has been well spent. At the time of Crush It's publication, Andy had already been in business 10 years, selling sports nutrition products through his Missouri-based brick-and-mortar chain, Supplement Superstores, S2. Despite 8 locations, S2 was doing what most businesses do, treading water. Business was good, but not great, certainly not enough for Andy to take home more than about $50,000 a year. It was all a single guy at the time needed to pay the rent and enjoy dinner out every now and then. But Andy's ambitions had been significantly bigger when he and his business partner, Chris Klein, had launched the original store. All his life, Andy had been entrepreneurial, selling baseball cards, snow cones, even light bulbs door to door. He liked making money, and he was frustrated that he couldn't get the business to grow faster. Yet, although he wasn't bringing in the returns he thought he would, it was sure better than working for somebody else. No matter what, he wasn't about to give up and go get a real job. So Andy decided that if doing something else wasn't an option, he'd need to focus on the part of the business that he did enjoy, helping people create their stories. Customers would visit his stores and return 6 months later, completely transformed after using the knowledge and products they'd taken home with them. Some had lost as much as 100 pounds. Many had dramatically changed their lives. So Andy doubled down on doing right by his customers, making sure they left his store feeling confident and equipped with everything they needed to achieve their goals. Store traffic immediately picked up. Everybody knows when they're being sold. No matter how slick and cool and shiny a salesman is, customers recognize a fucking salesman. We all know them. And so when you have somebody who genuinely cares, people feel the difference. They feel it in the conversation and in their heart. And it has to come from a genuine place or it doesn't work. It was around this time that he found Crush It, which also talked about caring about customers and focusing on what you are providing others as opposed to focusing on yourself. It was a pivot point, reinforcing his instincts and confirming that he was taking the business in the right direction. I was passionate about making money, and that's what held me back for so long. I wanted to make money so bad that all I cared about was making money, like most of these dudes who are trying to start businesses. And when you're always focused on the money, you don't really think about what you could do better for your customers. When I shifted that focus and started caring about the customer in front of me, things started happening. I'm not super passionate about bodybuilding. I'm not a workout freak. I work out and stay in good shape, but it's just part of what I do, so I can do other things. I'm passionate about creating people's success stories. Andy and Chris reallocated a large chunk of their marketing budget to improving their in-store customer transactions. They handed out free t-shirts. They hired extra staff to advise people on their nutrition. They kept a clutch of umbrellas by the door for people to take with them if it started to rain. In short, they provided a customer experience completely different from what most people are used to. Their business doubled every year for 5 years in a row. Eventually, they increased their advertising and marketing budget. Advertising should be used to accelerate the stories that are being told about you. People were finding us, coming into our company, staying, and referring their friends. If people aren't telling good stories, all advertising is going to do is speed your death. The year 2009 also saw Andy and Chris start another company, First Form, a premium brand of supplements. This one was founded from the get-go on the principles Andy had finally realized were critical to business success. The marketing strategy to build First Form was simple and grassroots. Care about the customers, give them exactly what they want and more, and then create opportunities for them to easily tell others about their great experience. That's where social media came in. Andy had been on Facebook for a while, but hadn't been using it properly. Now he took a strategic approach, going heavy on valuable content instead of constant pictures of his dog, though Andy's dogs still get plenty of screen time, and deservedly so, creating a place where his community could come together. In addition, he started building his personal brand. He tried Twitter, but struggled to cram everything he wanted to say into 140 characters, so though at First Form has a healthy following, you won't find Andy himself there. He calls Snapchat an edifying tool because it allows the world to see the real life behind the scenes work of entrepreneurship, though he admits he uses Instagram stories more now. As for Instagram, he did exactly the opposite of what normally works best on the platform. To great effect, he has over 600,000 followers. I post pictures and videos and make long-ass captions, and when I first started it, people told me, oh, nobody wants to read this shit, but apparently they do. With social media, I think it's more about being authentic to yourself and finding what's going to be the thing that suits you best versus where everybody is and deciding that's where you need to be. It's about finding what works and working with that. Together, the companies grew from $1 million in sales to $100 million. Andy predicts that 2018 will see in excess of $200 million. As his brand and businesses swelled, people started to notice that Andy knew something other entrepreneurs didn't. The press reached out to get his story, and the more he shared, the more people wanted to know. He met a writer, Vaughn Kohler, who suggested he write a book. He was ready, so the two sat down for a series of interviews. They videotaped their sessions, and Andy thought some clips might make good content for Instagram and Facebook. Jackpot. They started going crazy. I had one that got 2 or 3 million views, and it was a 15-second clip. After each post, Andy would get messages from people asking where they could hear the full podcast, so Andy figured he'd better start producing one. In June 2015, he and Kohler started co-hosting the MFCEO Project, a motivational podcast about business and success. The first episode debuted at number one, and the program has stayed in the top 50 in the managing and marketing category on iTunes since that day, earning 1.5 million downloads per month. Andy's persona and fiery delivery made him a natural for the speaking circuit, and the invitations started flooding in. He enjoys public speaking so much that he accepts every opportunity he can, whether it's 5 people or 5,000. Sometimes when he's moved to do so, he speaks for free. Sometimes he gets a $50,000 fee for a single event. Starting in spring 2017, he launched a YouTube channel, The Frisella Factor, on which he answers his podcast listeners' emailed questions. It took 18 years for Andy to get to where he is now, and he envies the younger generation of entrepreneurs who have never known a world where they couldn't connect to the bigger world with a click of a mouse. However, he also thinks that the younger generation would do well to remember that certain values and business practices are timeless. My journey took much longer than it should have. We created our first business pre-social media, building everything through real word of mouth. Our second business was created post-social media, so we've done it in both eras, and The reason that we're successful is because the lessons we learned pre-social are applicable to post-social. You just have to use the tools the right way to accelerate the word of mouth. But if you're starting out right now, if it takes you 17 years, there's something wrong with your brain. You can reach people instantly and you get instant feedback. All the things that took us months and years to figure out could be known in a short amount of time. Now you can connect with people all over the world on a minute-by-minute basis. The kids now that are starting out are lucky. But they're handicapped too. They rely too much on the social. They rely too much on the likes, the shares, the messaging, and not enough on the face-to-face interactions. And learning how to create customer experience comes from face-to-face, man. You know, seeing somebody's eyes light up, seeing somebody smile, seeing somebody reach out and shake your hand and say, "Thank you so much for helping me with this. I really appreciate it." That shit you can't get through the internet. Unless they can go through that process, they're always going to be trying to automate. And that's why you see so many people creating a product that they sell versus creating a true brand that represents something. If you can bridge these two things together, the social media smarts with the skills to engage face-to-face with empathy and care, you've really got something special.
Conclusion. I'm often asked what I've learned in the years since I published Crush It. The answer is this. I was right. Social media does equal business. Innovation makes people uncomfortable. We should care desperately about everything, yet not care at all what anyone else thinks. Someone will always be trying to tear you down. Talent has little value without patience and persistence. Success takes a shitload of work, and the people who ultimately break through and crush it are those who get all that and go for their dreams anyway. I want you to find your courage and go for it. Somewhere out there is a middle-aged engineer, a single-parent exterminator, or a department store sales clerk trying to get through school who is reading or listening to this book and thinking, "Man, I fucking hate this job, but I love pizza, and I'm going to start a YouTube channel and become the next Emeril Lagasse." People will think it's a ridiculous idea, just as people thought I was ridiculous when I wrote Crush It. But it's not ridiculous. It's not even sweetly optimistic. The proof is in the pudding. When I wrote Crush It, I was basically just telling the world what I had done to grow a wine store in New Jersey. Now, as I record this, I was a judge on Apple's first original TV show. I hope this book has inspired you to change your life for the better. People often tell me they want to be like me. I'd rather you be like you. But if you really want to be like me, quit being a student of entrepreneurship and start doing the goddamn work. If you do, this will be the last business book you'll ever need to listen to. Success will happen faster for some people than others. But if you're loving life and doing what you feel you were born to do, you'll be going in the right direction. Stay the course. It pays to be brave. If it helps, think of me as a shield between you and all the negativity out there. Believe me, I've heard every criticism and weathered every insult. I've had to defend my position thousands of times, and I've faced disappointments. I've taken all the punches, and I'm not only still standing, but I'm stronger than ever. There is nothing that anyone can throw at you that they haven't already thrown at me. If I can stomach it, so can you, if you want to crush it badly enough. Remember, you're not trading in your day job for an easier life. There's nothing easy about becoming an entrepreneur and influencer. You're trading it for a different life, one with more flexibility and fun. Chad Collins credits Crush It with helping him create his seven-figure companies and two Guinness Book of World Record fan festivals, Lego Brick Fest Live and Mind Fair, out of a YouTube channel he created with his seven-year-old daughter. Collins actively tried to avoid the entrepreneurial life because he knew how hard it would be. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs, and when it was going well, awesome. When it was bad, it was really bad. I made a choice to work for the man on purpose. But he wasn't happy being an intrapreneur. and when he saw a chance to create the life of his dreams, he jumped. He believes the experience has primed his daughter for success too, no matter what path she pursues. Jordan was interviewed by Time for Kids, which